So we read a Ben Horowitz book at the very beginning, Hard Thing About Hard Things. And, you know, he says explicitly in that book, like, you don't run a business with two people.
You guys are reading it together. You pause, look at each other after that sentence. Hey, Pronouncers, welcome back to the show. Excited to have you back. Got an awesome guest. But real quick, Pronouncers Conf, it's coming up.
Print Hustlers, November 4th, 5th, and 6th. Newport Beach, California. Bruce, are you taking anyone surfing? No?
Actually, no. If anybody maybe wants to go, I got a bunch of boards.
First day, Liquid Graphics, coolest shop in the country for a Printavo Inksoft User Summit. Day two, awesome speakers. I think automation tech is the theme. Day three, Bella Canvas. So like, you guys are raising the bar. It's going to be incredible. Get your tickets. It's going to sell out. And it's my birthday weekend, so I better see you there.
So Ferry's going to be blacked out.
No. It's the best weekend of the year. I love that Print Hustlers is my birthday. It's like I get to see all y'all. So, all right, Bruce.
So a couple ads, and then an awesome guest. Our guest today, two brothers who took over a family business and what they're doing to grow things like outbound, acquiring other companies, and just how they're thinking about it. Honestly, I think these are some of the best just because when you come from outside the business, you have such a fresh view from when if you're building it up, you get kind of jaded over time and you want to be that person doing. So really cool to hear their perspective. But first, GraphX Source. If you need a solution to improve efficiency and reduce costs in your art department, you already know GraphX offers industry-leading outsourcing options for your shop. And what's really cool is they're actually a part of your team. So they're plugging into your shop management platform. They're handling SEPs, mockups, creative art, order management, digitizing, and customer service. They've been doing it for over 30 years as well. And be sure, mention the Printavo pod that sent you over, and they'll give you half off your first vector, SEP, or digitized order.
Bruce, have you heard of Multicraft underscore daddy? Well, he's got 900 and some followers. And if you need ink supplies or a daddy, Multicraft Screen Printing and Digital Supplies for over 50 years has been providing you with top brands at competitive prices. If you mention the Printavo pod, you'll get 10% off your first order. And DM Multicraft underscore daddy right now. He gives away a case of free PMI tape every single week. So thanks so much to the team at Multicraft. We appreciate you. Thanks, Dave. And you're doing great on Instagram.
EasyWay works with over 100 plus distributors all over the US, but more importantly, they're a partner in your success. They can help with how-tos, best practices, just general questions. They're there to help you guys in Reclaim. And you know you shouldn't be spending all day cleaning dirty screens. That's why their line of environmentally conscious chemicals gets the job done faster, more efficiently, and costs you a fraction of the cost per screen. Check them out, EasyWay. Thank you guys so much for supporting. Last but not least, Supercolor is the world's best heat transfer. It's made for screen printers by screen printers, and they truly understand the pressures and expectations of running a screen printing shop. And so they really pride themselves on being super fast and super easy. They've got this incredible new next-gen transfer that's running live now. It's really great, really quick and easy to peel and work with. And honestly, their support team, though, the support team is incredible. I mean, you email them, you have an issue, they respond super quickly, they take care of things. So they are there. They're another partner in your growth. Make sure to mention Printavo 15, and that gets you 15% off your order. All right, let's jump into the episode. All right, we are live here. What are you working on? What are you writing down?
Me? Yeah. Next for our call? This is me. Ooh. This is me preparing. Oftentimes you get super excited about stuff like this, like business strategy, being in the daily mixings of the machine, like actually setting aside the time to do all the prep work we wanted to do. Didn't quite happen. So
that's okay. Because Jackson, you said you were out sick last week. You feel better though?
Yeah. I mean, I think there have been so many people out sick last week. Like we had a batch of COVID come through or something like that.
Yeah, I woke up on Friday morning. I woke up on Friday morning with a fever, and I was like, I haven't had a fever since like sixth grade. This is weird. But so what did we get linked up through Kevin Baumgart, I think?
Correct. Yeah. All right. So he reached out to Jackson.
Yeah, we listened to one of his podcasts with you all. Will clued me in. And yeah, a lot of relevancy, similar setup for us as far as like hunter gatherer, what our inside sales do versus needing that outside presence. We listened to that podcast. It was awesome. I reached out to Kevin, kind of gave him a little bit of context, a little bit of background. Then we worked with him, for a session, and then yeah, post that work, he connected us with you all. Yeah.
It was that you guys wanted to build an outbound arm for sales or
yes.
Inbound as well.
So we have per most shops, it's like, especially most shops that he's described or work with, we receive orders traditionally. We've been around for 44 years. So we have a pretty kind of healthy organic network of customers that's local and regional. So most of what we do every day is just receiving orders. And what Will and I wanted to do, kind of like per bigger strategy goals that we've set up, you know, recognize, okay, well, we've got 3 to 5 year goals, we got 7 to 10 year goals. You know, we cannot achieve those goals unless we build a sales system. So that means, you know, we've worked with a couple outside sales reps before, but without a lot of training, without a lot of experience, it was hard for us to figure out how do you build a sales machine where you can just basically turn a knob, get more sales versus trying to build something from the ground up. So yeah, both outside, reaching out proactively, building out our leads system. But the full, you know, work with Kevin, it's like the full works, right? Like how are you interacting your customers with your inbound new leads, inbound old, you know, old accounts, house accounts. So it ended up being like the full works, but our intention was, okay, we've got goals of growth. In order to do that, we have to break out of the small town printer, small city printer, you know, regional printer. We have to break that mold and kind of be able to expand further.
I think it's really interesting, and I work with Kevin really closely, and we just talk about how like we take this industry for granted, that we just get so much inbound work. Like, what if we actually had to go knock on doors?
He's like, wait, what?
He's like, what? You guys are just like spoiled. Like, you guys don't have to work for it compared to.
Are.
But I think
I had a funny comment with him. I was like, Kevin, come on, between you and me, like, people don't cold call anymore, right? Like, that is antiquated. People don't do that. And he's like, dude. All the time. That is one of the only ways you can grow business.
You guys are second generation. So you took over like Blue Ridge, as I was reading, like 44 years in business. And then you guys took it over almost 8 years ago. Tell us about the transition, family business. I think second generation, I bought into a print shop. And so my business partner's twice my age. And I think those are really fascinating. Like, tell us about that transition. Why'd you guys decide to do it? Things like that.
Sure. So yeah, family business. Our dad started the business, graduated from college with an art history degree, realized he wasn't going to work in like, you know, a museum or anything like that at the time, failed as a waiter and, you know, took, you know, like many people here, took a community college class on screen printing. You know, this is late 70s, really liked it, had an artist friend and, back then, he posted an ad in the back of like this organic gardening magazine, you know, with this big kind of sunflower, you know, garden organically, garden naturally design. And, you know, the mail orders started flooding in. He's like, oh, okay, there's a business here. Literally, you know, curing the shirts in like the oven in the art studio, you know, that whole thing. And so started it. So we grew up around screen printing our entire lives. You know, spent summers in high school, working in the print shop, you know, from reclaim screens all the way up to like, you know, loading trucks and semis in our bigger days, to both of us leaving. I went off, was a public school teacher for a little while. Jackson, he was in, worked in a vocational rehab place and, came back because like, you know, Steven, as you said, it is a unique opportunity. Here's this family business. You know, we both liked it, like the art, like the production side of it. And so, I realized maybe I should give it a chance because our dad's not going to be around doing it forever. And so, you know, here's this ready to go business or this not ready to go, but here's this thriving business. And so came back about, I guess, let's see here, 13 years ago or so. And, started like more on the office side of, sales and work our ways through that. And about 8 years ago, we took our father, John, out to Long Beach. And after the end of the trade show, we fired him. We told him he was not allowed to come into the office anymore. He needed to take a step back. And he was very excited about that. Totally cool with it. And, at that point he kind of became our consultant. He would come in and hang out, and him and Jackson shared an office. So they would talk shop for 20% of the time and, whatever else they were talking, the other 80. And that was the beginning of us, taking over. We had a general manager at the time. Shortly after he left the company, moved out of the area. And so then we were really kind of both feet in the water kind of deal. Learning through the school of hard knocks, running this business where we grew up around a lot of these employees. We worked with them, around them, for them, again in high school, college days. And so now we're the ones running the show and really kind of, learning the hard way of, reinventing the wheel, so to speak, and like business management and operations and sales and the whole nine yards. And so, that was 8 years ago, and we have thankfully survived to this day.
So, okay. You highlighted there a point that I thought was we fired our dad. I hear of so many shops that are I'm going to try to pass it off to my kids. I don't know if my kids want it. And there's what I feel like is it's sometimes maybe the kids don't know if they want it or not. They're definitely capable of it, but the parents aren't ready to let go, right? Generational gaps. When you said you fired your dad and he was totally cool with it, did he really take a 180 approach to say all right, boys, I'm literally going to step away? Or was there some hard times where he's yeah, but you should probably do it this, or was it Orange County Chopper, presses throwing against the wall, and or was it pretty clean?
He phased out over a year, and after that year of moderate coming into work, he was organically going that direction anyway, instead of coming in 5 days a week, coming in 4 days a week, then 3 days a week. And we took that year to he had a big retirement party, gave him some closure, set a date, gave him some closure. So no, there was no friction. And we have a unique situation in that there's a lot of family kicking around. We work together. We work with our father. We have a really good relationship to the point of where there's not a ton of, we've never just had that much friction. But actually one thing you just said that I would circle back to, when it came to the second generation and considering talking to shop owners and whether a kid wants it, and they're definitely capable of it. One of the things I thought that was interesting is, in order to know whether you're capable of running a shop, right? The vetting period is, I would say, more than a year. I wouldn't say I had resentment, but I was, the friction, the frustration of learning how to manage without training, being put in that position because I was family, or no, they didn't put me in that position, having that opportunity because I was family. In one sense, that's totally unfair. This dude, I was 23 or something. This 23-year-old should not come in and start functioning as a general manager above, when people that have been there for 20 years. So the social dynamics was really interesting and really challenging.
I had that big time. My press ops were who's this? Yeah. I mean, my press ops, they're just who's this freaking kid? What's he doing? It was so hard to, earn the respect.
It's ageism, right?
So hard to earn the respect. And those employees, it just didn't end up working out because of that, eternal, this isn't fair friction. Have you had employees then leave because they don't like the generational changes, or has it been a pretty, cause it seems like you guys run a pretty happy, sound business.
Did that. I mean, do I think we didn't have immediate disruption? Again, he and I have both been in the mix, so we were fortunate there. Do I think that was a root cause of people eventually leaving? Certainly some people. Sure.
Yeah. As many other guests and you all have pointed out, COVID was also a natural kind of break and like reset. So certainly when we came back, we were a lot smaller, and we had some people that did not, they were doing fine in some ways, and some people we couldn't bring back for just because of expense, and some wasn't the right cultural fit. And so that also kind of played a part in you know, that was like the, you know, the second or the third reset for the company. So, you know, some of those questions were answered because of COVID. Some we've had a little bit of natural attrition over the years, some legacy employees, but otherwise we're still kind of, you know, us and many long-term employees, we're all kind of grinding it out together because, you know, really, even when we butt heads, and sometimes we butt heads a lot, you know, they, I believe that, the, you know, these employees, they care a lot about the business just because of what they have participated in over the last 10, 15, 20 years. You know, I mean, we got two employees going on like 27 years now, right?
Wow.
Like, there's people who've been here a long time. I mean, legacy, right? And they know the business and they do well, and they can still, you know, outprint almost anybody, maybe anybody in the building, right? So, so we have those kinds of employees, and so they have their work ethic has, you know, allowed us to say, okay, even though we don't always agree, like, we're all in this together.
You were talking a little bit, we didn't get into details, but you're talking about acquiring other shops. That's interesting. I also would like to go a little bit deeper now onto sales outbound, because I think sounds great, hard to execute. And just to understand like progress there. So maybe like, maybe we're just, let's just go all growth in. So, maybe first let's wrap up the outbound. Cause I think Kevin, awesome, super sharp. He's got the principles and everything to execute. And then now it's like on you guys to actually do it. And we're doing it as a company now. I don't know if Farag, if you guys have really tried it, but it's a different muscle. It's like going to the gym and it's like, you've only done, you know, maybe upper body forever. And now it's like, all right, now you need to do cardio or something, or, you know, something that's a lot harder that you've never actually done. You never ran like, Stephen and Matt Marcotte yesterday.
After Kevin starts working with you, now you actually have to put in the work to like do it.
Yeah. So how, what happened?
Yeah. What happened? How did that go?
Well, it's a great question. It's also, I mean, we concluded our work with Kevin, 2 weeks ago. It's fresh.
Yes.
I mean, I think what we learned was, okay, these are your traditional roles within sales, your SDR, your account management, your CSR, you know, who on your team is going to function in those roles or those seats. So first step was, okay, we have traditional like inbound account executives. On staff, we had one person that was like naturally a hunter, came from like car sales, just to the core kind of a salesman. So we were able to look at our staff and basically say, all right, I can do outbound work. One of our employees can do outbound work. We're putting the seats of, you know, outbound. But the problem is, the first piece to solve is like, we have a crazy amount of leads because of we're using one of the resources we're using, like a lead generation, pay to play, you know, resource, which is awesome. So solve problem number one. I mean, those are marketing qualified leads, not sales qualified leads. So like, you know, you have to figure out the quality of them. We have a huge amount of leads. So first step was immediately like, okay, well, we have people to process leads as soon as they come to us. Who's going to reach out and do the SDR work? So, which I think, you know, I don't know what Kevin would say. My assumption would be 80% of sales systems fail nowadays at the SDR level.
Just so everyone knows, SDR, sales development representative, bottom of the totem pole, this person is taking leads and literally setting up appointments. Like, they're the appointment setter saying, hey, this is Blue Ridge. Are you guys interested in merch? You are, great. Let's set you up for an appointment. Is that kind of, am I picking up what you're throwing down?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. You know, 15 years ago, they would have been called cold callers. Nowadays, more nuanced. They can do more than cold calling. Like, we operate a pretty robust email marketing campaign. There's huge pros and cons to that. I know, like, a gentleman you had a couple weeks ago, kind of that contract shop out of Reno, he mentioned like he's really careful and does 20 or 30 emails a month. Like, emailing is real. The more meticulous and focused you get with it, the better effectiveness. So you're kind of like having to thread the needle. Okay, well, if I want to generate hundreds of leads or thousands of leads because I want to double our company, you know, you can't actually be that meticulous. You just got to throw some volume somewhere. So yeah, SDR definitely involves a lot of meeting setting, right? Which is new concept for our industry. You know, I got a buddy in like tech sales. He knew when he's making an email, his goal is set a meeting. Like, that is the goal of his call. In screen printing, it's like, what's the goal of your call? Like, I'm going to sell a shirt immediately on the phone. I'm going to try to sell 100 shirts. And that's just not really like modern sales techniques. You are trying to build these relationships that can be long lasting and kind of build an account versus I'm just going to go in there and try to get an order for 50 shirts right now or 100 shirts. So yeah, SDR for us is, and we're, and especially in our industry for screen printing, I think if you can't solve the SDR puzzle, kind of like the sales, all the other sales processes on the back end, they're not going to get the chance to execute. So like the really uncomfortable question of like, who is going to pick up the phone? As you said, lowest person on the totem pole, like who is going to do that grind? Who's going to pick up the phone and make those phone calls? And as I was talking to Kevin about it, I was like, well, can't we just make everybody on staff pick up the phone and like turn into cold callers? And he's basically like, yeah, that's just not a realistic expectation. Somebody who's going to come in and like be an active SDR, the turnover rate for SDRs is brutal, right? Like they're doing it for a year. That's a good amount of time to do it, to have somebody in that SDR seat. So for us, I mean, that's like literally where we are right now. We know the problem. We have the system. You know, I can muscle through as an SDR, when I remember to do my SDR work, right? But like Bruce, as you were saying, these are new muscles. So the, Kevin's brilliant because he's just like total package. He just gives, you know, he will give you all of the answers. Like this.
So have you hired that role, or that's what you're looking for now?
We have two people functioning in that role, me and then one person on site. But what we're basically saying is, we almost made the decision to hire immediately. So we're just going to put some resources to it. We're going to put some money to it. We got a recommendation for somebody that can just like train up an SDR for you immediately, just total package, you know, costs a lot. But, we didn't take that role. We didn't take that option yet. We're going to try to do it internally. But you know, it's like the clock's ticking kind of thing. Proof of concept. You know, Will and I are going to have open and honest, tough conversation if we can't get the SDR piece off the ground, because it's crucial. And talking about scalability, like if we're trying to double our business, you know, in 5 years, like it's not just one SDR that we have to get functioning correctly. There's going to be multiple people sitting in that seat. So short story is, hopefully we'll be a success story in a couple months.
All right, real quick, I got to tell you something. This is really interesting, and here's why. We formed a company called Inktava. You may have heard of it, but it has three different brands right now: Printavo, Inksoft, and Graphixel. We're all sister companies now, a big happy family. What we're able to do is Printavo is managing your shop management and workflow organization. Inksoft can run your website and handle online stores at scale. So running multiple different stores for fundraisers, schools, company stores, and everything in between. And Graphixflow is a brand new product to be able to help reduce all the back and forth with art. So it has a huge art library that you can put on your website so customers can see and pluck what they want. Plus, you can also be able to collect different ideas and send them to customers to approve as well. Really, really cool. Plus, in-app editing. It's like Canva, but specifically for shops. All right, check it out. All those brands are on Inktavo.com. That's Inktavo.com. All right, thanks.
Yeah, so this is really interesting. Okay, so print shops, when they want to build out an outbound sales team, they have this expectation that the person that's doing inbound is magically going to turn to outbound. Like, hey, person, all these leads that were coming to you, half your day you have to now get new leads and go outbound. So, like, That doesn't work. That's a myth. The person that does outbound needs to be like the outbound department needs to be the outbound department. I think it's also very intelligent, and there's a lot of wisdom behind a sales development rep setting meetings is not the person closing the shirt order. Like two separate functions. So if you have a really talented salesperson that can get on the phone with anyone and that can sell apparel, whatever, get them into Gildan's, get them into this, get them into that, all you have to do is find someone in front of them to set up opportunities and appointments. And that person's job stops once the customer says, yeah, I'm interested. Right. And so like for us, we've been having this struggle too, where the account managers are so inundated with leads and inbound and this, they never do their outbound work because they have no one filling up their tank. Right. But if you think about that role, let's just say what this role would be, it's an entry-level sales role. So we're talking $40,000 to $70,000 a year. I don't know. So we're talking $5,000 to $6,000 per month. If they can cold call 1,000 people a month and set up, I don't know, 30 or 40 orders like that get closed, they're going to pay themselves off exponentially, right? Like, so you're spending $5,000-$6,000 on that employee and you're hoping that that role will generate $100,000, $200,000 a month. But yet shops are very like, I can't just hire someone, but then they can go and buy a press for $100,000. So like, it's very weird that we don't see this obvious muscle in our space. Like, we struggle with this too. Same exact thing, right? I don't know. I've just kind of had this like eye-opening experience in the last month about these sales development roles. Cause like, we just don't focus on them. I don't know.
Well, that's fair. You know, I mean, so I'm on the operations side. Jackson is on the marketing and sales side. That's kind of how we've split internal roles over the years in terms of the day-to-day type functions. But I sat in on a lot of the calls because I also sit in a integrator seat for our company, and so I just wanted to hear this. What this consultant was going through, and the thing that really appealed to me is that, you know, we were alluding to it, like when we took over Blue Ridge Graphics, you know, we were really kind of like school of hard knocks, like reinventing the wheel, like just system after system after system. We felt like we had to like build from like the ground up. And eventually we just really kind of like ran into walls, like, you know, this is, you just can't do this all the time. So Kevin offers a system. He offered, you know, this set sales system. And so now we have the pieces, Bruce, and, you know, kind of what you were saying is like, are we going to be able to execute? Well, now we have the framework, and right. And Stephen, what you just said is right. We recognize that this SDR person, like that is like, that's like almost like the missing link to like, you know, linking an outside person to an inside person. And kind of like that transition is who's going to feed the outside person. It's not the inside. So it's got to be someone else like this SDR, you know? And so if you have if you can commit to it, which is why we almost jumped on right away to like, you know, an SDR, onboarding company here, we're going to give you the SDR. They're going to be trained up. Here's how it goes. You know, another Kevin recommendation. I mean, I'd have to say it's almost still on the table because it's kind of, it's own, you know, the SDR, maybe they're the linchpin.
How much does something like that cost? I know like Kevin's talked to us about it a little bit, like appointment setting services and like lead generating. What is an investment like that?
Yeah, I think there's two types. There's two products. They have the staffing product, and then they have like the management product. So the light version is they will find somebody per your qualifications. They will vet them for you, as in like they need to be local, they can be local. If not, it doesn't matter. So they'll find the individual. They will train the individual. So they will put them through a couple weeks of boot camp, train them on how to sell. Like, and these are probably not like, they're not the greenest of green. Like, there's going to be a little bit of experience. So expectations are obviously super clear with who they're hiring. They train them and then they deliver them to you and they're your employee. So like end of contract, end of deal, you know, not under more than $5,000, less than $10,000 for that product.
But you pay a one-time fee.
That's a one-time fee. Yeah.
I mean,
yeah.
If that works, that's kind of a steal.
that.
Because the training and finding can take a long time.
If you're local to us, it's way more expensive. Wouldn't recommend it.
Gotcha.
Oh, interesting. Why? Like 3X, 2X?
The other product they offer is like, they'll keep them on their staff. They will keep them as employees. Obviously, it's a lot more.
So they're like a contract role. But what if they're for you local? How much more was that? It was like 3 times more, 2 times more?
The paying for the onboarding?
You don't have to pay more for them to track down a local person. I mean, that's not like an added.
Oh, okay.
But it's just that a lot of industries, it does not matter if this person's in Louisiana or whatever.
But I think the point here is, okay, say it was $10,000.
Yeah.
Right? Like, if it actually works, you won't blink.
I know.
Right? Yeah. Like, if it... And so we use some tools, like we use supportshepherd.com that finds us VAs overseas, and you pay a one-time finder's fee and they've got a 30-day money-back guarantee. And now we're just like rinse, repeat, rinse, repeat, rinse, repeat, and we're scaling out our ops team. And so like I look at it and say, if you're going to hire someone as an SDR, you might as well pay the premium to get white glove service.
Yeah.
Because you know that the chances of sticking are better. Because like, say they work for you. Say you go out and you're cheap and you hire someone by yourself and you try to train them yourself.
Yeah.
And it takes 2 months of your time. And then they quit after six months. Well, you just burn $30,000 or $40,000 right there, right?
Yeah.
Like your time, their time. So I don't know.
That's an interesting premise. Like, okay, so me, Will, we have not formal sales background. So the possibility of us not having that formal training, going out, successfully vetting, successfully hiring, successfully delivering expectations, the likelihood of that compared to, and like how much money are we going to save compared to, the white glove where somebody's just going to.
And when you're interviewing salespeople, they're such good interviewers.
Yeah.
I've been, raise your hand if you've been conned.
Yeah.
My hands up high.
Oh, yeah. Like, I suck at interviewing salespeople.
Yeah, I think I'm like 3 for 6.
Hey, that's not bad.
It may not be. You know what's relative, though? Here's what's interesting. Okay, guess what a referral fee is for an engineer that includes no training. What percentage?
Oh, percentage?
Referral fee?
So like the SDR, maybe that's like
30%.
Let's call it, that's like 10%, a little bit less. Yeah, I mean, it's close to that. It's between 20% to 30%. Yeah. And so these salaries are, from 100 to 200s or so, right? On the higher end. Significant.
So Bruce, at the peak of like when it was impossible to hire engineers, you were essentially paying almost a entry level salary to try to headhunt the best engineers, right? Like,
I mean, the thing that I ran into was my first reaction was knee jerk. Hell no, right? Like, it's so much money up front. And what's the guarantee? And what happens, if it doesn't work out after 6 months? Because normally they give you a 90-day guarantee. What happens though is that yes, the market was very difficult to find good people, which I think for any roles, it's still very hard to find, that top 10% of a quality of a team member. And then also, you get kind of burnt out. Like it's such a grind to constantly be interviewing and phone screening and interviewing again and hiring, and then it doesn't work. Maybe hopefully it does. And then you go back again, that I was like, wow, we just really need a good pipeline of folks. And it's like, ideally I can hire someone like an HR person that can recruit and do this. Of which I tried that. I got desperate and hired the wrong person again, but that premium payment for them was sort of like hiring the contract HR person. And so that's why I just said, I'm just gonna burn out if I keep, trying to do this over and over. So anyway, I just found that it's interesting that it's a little relative.
Hey, I wanna pivot for a second. Like, the two of you are essentially co-owners, and I'm curious, I like saw something in our notes that said like Traction is a BlackBerry, Pinnacle is an iPhone. And then there was some stuff about you guys as co-owners and making decisions and financial decisions and paying yourself. Like, where do we start there? I have no idea. But how is running a company together and being related, like, and talking about money and stuff? We want like the dirt.
I mean, I'll just run an intro, which was like when we first started managing, not a lot of training and how to be a manager, because that's hard to do, especially if it's like family business. How do you like actually train somebody to be the manager? We didn't bootstrap it, right? It was just like functioning and we just stepped in. So we read a Ben Horowitz book at the very beginning, Hard Thing About Hard Things. And, you know, he says explicitly in that book, like, you don't run a business with two people.
You guys are reading it together. You pause, look at each other after that sentence.
That's what we know. And like I said at the beginning or whatever, a couple minutes ago, we have a unique situation. Like, our family is strong and it's super grateful for that. We basically, we looked at each other in a sense and we're basically like, we're going to do it the hard way, even though it's not the smart way, because I'd rather work with my brother than not. And it was a battle worth fighting. So I think it took a long time for us to separate ourselves enough responsibility wise. And that probably didn't really start to get a lot of traction until maybe 3 or 4 years ago. I don't know where you would say timeline, when we had enough experience that we could explain to the company, this is Will's seat, this is Jackson's seat. But it was, brutal. I mean, many people left because of that. I mean, we have a good turnover, but I'm sure many of the people that left had, you know, for sure, top down issue, right? Like, it was because there's not a aligned strategy or vision at the top. You know, they go to me because I'm a pushover. They don't go to him because he's harder. Like, there's a lot of, you know, family run business. Like, so it has family dynamics. I'm going to go to the nice.
Who's older between the two of you?
Me.
So like, did you guys ever think about naming like a CEO and like a not like second in command? Like,
yeah, we
did. So we did it first, and you know, I'm kind of like, so we just went off, just finished up with Kevin and talking about like that whole kind of like that structure, that system that he's offering. And, you know, at the beginning, we kind of mentioned, you know, kind of like, we're just trying to build everything from the ground up. Like, we tried to build our own, like, performance evaluation, like, system. Like, well, we're not going to meet quarterly with employees, because why meet quarterly when you could meet three times a year? So we're going to have like these trimesters of like, you know, meeting groups. Why? Because we had no clue as to what we were doing. But eventually, what we kind of decided over the years is, or kind of realized over the years is, and that kind of goes back to kind of Traction and Pinnacle and things like that. There are these systems out here. And so really, our goal should not be to reinvent every wheel out there. Like, we talk about burnout. I mean, hard to manage with each other. Yes. As Jackson said, thankfully, we, you know, it is family first. And, you know, we've picked up, you know, watching our father in the business, right? He's a pretty low key, kind of laid back kind of person. And so most of our business decisions kind of maybe have a little bit of that flavor, in terms of how we ourselves kind of work with each other. But the hard thing was, is that we didn't have a system when we first started. So it was like you just said, it was like going to mom or going to dad, like, who's going to give you the answer, right? And like, that is one of the things that almost tore apart our company there for a while. We've had a few types of those events along the way, but that was one. Is that
first one? Yeah.
We didn't have a system, and so, like, you know, people would almost like lose their minds because I would tell them one thing and be like, Jackson just told me this. He was on the floor not 5 minutes ago. He told me to do the exact opposite. Oh, there was no system. So, that's kind of, I mean, it was almost, you know, by necessity, by almost like, I guess it was by recommendation. We were talking with Mark Coudray at the time, you know, big industry guy, and, you know, certainly a guru of our industry. And he was the one who pointed out Traction to us, which is kind of what began that idea of, we don't have to make this system. There's a system out there. Let's apply ourselves to it. And so that we can focus on other things, i.e. the running of the business or the people or the product. It's not the actual system creation.
We talk about Traction a lot here, but you guys picked Pinnacle, which I hadn't heard of. Why Pinnacle?
Mm. Yeah. Well, Also, this ties into like the SDR conversation, only in the sense of like you pay to play. Like it's an investment to get an SDR. It's an investment to do one of these systems or to be trained in one of these systems. And we worked in Traction for a little while, and we worked with consultants for a little while. And again, you know, Mark Dre's like a brilliant guy, really introduced the concept of this is why you pay top dollar for people or for training, so that you don't have to recreate it yourself. So had a great experience with Traction. Will definitely has like the always learning. We both have liberal arts backgrounds, so he delved into Traction a lot, pretty deep. But what we kind of, in that experience, we just coincidentally bumped into a Traction consultant who said, "Hey guys, not a big deal. I actually am not a Traction consultant anymore. I'm a Pinnacle consultant." And he said, "Oh, okay, what's that?" And the, you know, short story is Pinnacle would be the next iteration of Traction. So, you know, going back to the source material, you have like Vern Harnish, Gino, I believe he was like a student of Vern's, used a lot. Vern Harnish wrote Scaling Up. I mean, this is like a pivotal, one of the five business books that need to be, you know, people need to read. Scaling Up, Gino works with Vern, builds Traction. People love Traction, gets really, really excited about Traction. And then Pinnacle is just kind of like the next iteration of Traction. These are people that have, this is a generation after Traction. So these are consultants. These are top mind people that have kind of like not graduated from the Traction school, but in one sense, like they all love Traction. They were all in Traction. And then they built a system, another iteration that has kind of organically evolved from Traction.
From the execution standpoint, was there certain things that just applied to you better? And if so, like, do you remember a couple of them?
Yeah, really it was this. It was that first we tried Traction on our own, right? We tried to implement it on our own without any outside help.
Just hard.
Very hard. Like, right. We were not, it was another place where we were going to fail miserably in front of the company. So we realized that we were reaching out to these implementers, right? You know, you're finding someone to hire these engineers, right? I just can't do it on my own anymore. We were not going to be able to roll this out to our company successfully. There's too many moving parts. And so reached out to this guy. He's like, "Yeah, I'm in Pinnacle," you know, in which I was a Traction coach. Yep. Now Pinnacle. And what appealed to us, what kind of like, I was very kind of hesitant. I was like, all right, I've read like four of the Traction books, like what's EOS and Traction and, you know, basically all of them just to kind of wrap my head around it. And he's like, "Well, one of the differences is, I switched because into, kind of one way he describes it is kind of like an open or a customized system where
open source,
where Traction, you know, it is, you got like the very hard bumper rails in what's in the Traction world. You've got like the 555 and the, you know, the people analyzer. You have these tools, right? It's the toolbox. And there's like 21 of them or something like that. But that's it. Like in terms of my understanding, I could be wrong, but in my understanding, like, you know, true pure Traction is like, okay, you use the Traction tools and that's it. Whereas in Pinnacle, they have very similar tools because they modeled a lot, just like from the whole like EO, Vern Harnish to Gino, Traction to, I don't know who the person is that made Track or that made Pinnacle, but they model after the other ones. And so, but at the same time, they're also pulling tools, they're pulling ideas from other sources. So the toolbox is much larger and it is, okay, here's this company in this state. Their focus is on people issues or their focus is on like performance and playbooks. So now we're going to bring in these additional tools to kind of really kind of cater to them, to kind of customize to what this company needs versus, look, you got these four people tools and that's it. Like, you know, let's fit you to this box rather than let's pull this from like the Harvard Business Review or like let's pull this tool from, you know, a Checklist Manifesto or whatever.
Love that book.
Yeah,
Checklist Manifesto is awesome.
So that's what it was. All right. It was kind of like what really drew us to that was basically it's an open system that we can, like, more things can be added to it, you know, on an as needed basis. Oh, it's a cash flow problem. Okay. Yeah. Well, guess what? They have a tool on cash flow. I mean, you know, Profit First is a part of the Pinnacle world.
That's a good example. Like, you can get help with all parts of your business. It's not just like a strategy resource. We roll in, we're saying, oh, we like this Profit First guy. They were able to help us, like, get trained up and help us better execute that. So it was,
I think what's really cool. So we right now are running traction religiously. It's a good BlackBerry. It's doing a good job in keeping us on the rails. Like, we're liking it, but you guys are very open to learning and continuous education and coaching and consulting. And, like, that's it's a very big investment, right? Like, first and foremost, it's not cheap. Is that something the two of you have agreed upon, that, like, hey, if we're going to do this, we need to have trainers around us and a support system, and we need to pay for coaches? Is that something, like, your dad told you? Like, what light bulb went off? Because I feel like some people are like, I'm just going to do it myself, I don't need any help. But, like, you guys seem very open to it. What changed? What decision did you guys make to get to that point? Has that always been how you are?
I think we just realized that, you know, we were probably honest with our capabilities. So I think we had these conversations. You know, our father, not experienced with consultants, but he was always a big fan of, like, going to Long Beach and going to ISS shows and getting training. And so he at least, like, planted the seed of, you can look outside of yourself, get industry knowledge from the experts. And I think, so Will and I started having that appreciation. First step was working with Mark Coudray, who like, great intro to consulting. I think we just had the honest conversation of, okay, we are not going to be able to carry the business any further or keep it going in a safe way unless rather the likelihood is, you know, small or greatly diminished compared to if you get a trainer, if you get a coach and somebody that you can learn from. So I think it was actually just more out of, like, not desperation, but, you know, exhaustion, right? Or just, like, the brutal reality of, like, just because he's here and just because I'm here doesn't make us geniuses, right? Like, we stepped in as second generation. We did not build this up. Like, our experience started much later than a lot of these people that are working for us, and much later than the industry. So we weren't going to win the award because I knew how to screen print better than anybody. It was, either get that help or you're just satisfied with, like, okay, you're going to be a local shop that kind of grows with your local economy.
I always joke that, like, what if our industry was run by a bunch of, like, Harvard Business School guys?
They'd do way better, maybe.
Like, the
printing part, but maybe that too. I don't know.
Yeah.
I think everything would be a lot more expensive.
Yeah, correct. It would be priced better. I think it was the best chance for success. Like, right? Like, we had to, as Jackson just said, we kind of had to recognize, like, you know, are we going to hold ourselves, like, you know thyself, right? Like, it is not pretty. Like, I was telling Jackson, I was like, oh, this is anxiety. 2 weeks ago, 3 weeks ago, when we were driving to our quarterly rock meeting with our guy, with our coach, right? And I was getting ready to say on, like, this many rocks, no, I didn't do this. No. You know, and, like, thankfully, like, the other two people on the leadership team, like, helped give us, like, you know, an average of a C for the quarter. But if it had been me, I mean, it would have been, like, you know, failing grade. So there is accountability there too. Yeah. I mean, it's a full time, it's almost, you know, it's similar to a full time employee, right? that consulting type, but the expertise they bring, a sounding board, someone who is good at business, but out of our business, you know, more industry agnostic. Those are really benefits to help us manage our company.
So
almost as, like, stewards, right? Like, what's the best thing we can do? Well, the best thing we can do probably for our company, for this company that we've been put in charge of, is to, like, help improve it by using experts, because we are not, yeah, right, as Jackson said, we're liberal.
It's good self-reflection.
I mean, yeah. You know, everyone gives the millennial generation shit. Look, like, we ask for help and we hire help and we, like, we bring it in. And I think, you know, like, when I wanted to bring consultants in, my business partner's like, eh, you know, we don't they're going to come in and tell us what we need to do. Like we know what we need to do. Right. right. Isn't that the typical, like,
we got the okay from our dad. Right. But he was only cause like he was out of the business. Right. Like if we had asked him to, like, you know, if he was like, the answer would have been no, like 10 years ago.
Like, yeah. Like you're paying what?
Yeah.
Like, correct. look what you could do for that. Yeah. But then when we think about it, like, you know, Matt Marcotte helps us on our production floor, Ryan Kasperian, right. Mark Coudre, like, you know, Kevin Baumgart, Traction Professionals, Profit First Professionals, like those are some big inflection points. And you guys are, you know, you guys are growing at a pretty big clip. Like, it's not like you're running a small thing. What's next for you guys? Do you guys enjoy, like, are you guys there 5 days a week? Do you guys like not going into work? Like, what's your kind of, what's on the horizon?
Yeah. Great question. We were just meeting at a coffee shop about that on Tuesday.
Yep. I think the goal is honestly with where we have been leading in through Pinnacle of identifying, you know, our annuals and our milestone goals, you know, 3 to 5 years, and kind of basically we've been at this now for about 2 years in the Pinnacle world of, and so now we're kind of starting to have a much better idea of where the business is going, how we're going to get there, i.e. yeah, we're going to pay for that. We're going to pay for that sales system to help integrate in. Making those types of decisions. Now the next, not hard set of questions, but big set of questions is, right, what do we see our roles in, right? I mean, I'm an integrator, like integrator and operation. Every day of the week, I work from home like one day a week, but every other time I'm supposed to like part of, you know, daily operations. Jackson sits in the visionary seat in sales. So we're like in it all the time. And so the conversation we had on Tuesday was like, okay, well, you know, what do we look like 3 to 5 years from now? Cause again, we're not the people to be coaching Blue Ridge Graphics forward. Like that's, you know, and we might not be the people to like jump to the next level on the day-to-day operations. Like we have employees who ask the right questions at the right time in a much kind of a more calm headed manner than either one of us on a regular basis. And so we've got good staff, we've got good support. It's now, how do we kind of continue that structure to put us more in those visionary roles of, okay, we know what we want. How are we going to help the whole company get there versus, you know, being the ones like operating every single lever?
Yeah. Getting the right people and back to the people.
I think it'd be cool to check in. Right? Yeah. I think it'd be cool to check in. Like, it's just really cool to hear. You guys are like working on the business and you're very like, oh, you guys, I feel like you guys are very self-aware. Like there's a sense of self-awareness and you're like looking past your biases and like being real with yourselves and stuff like that. So I give you guys a lot of kudos and being able to be related and come to work every day. Yeah. I don't know if I could do that.
That's
awesome.
We're super lucky there. Super fortunate.
Yeah, for sure.
Well, after this, you guys can hug it out if you want. Like, you know, oh, they're gonna turn the cameras off now.
Yeah, right. I've literally never.
You can hug it out or play the Step Brothers song. cool. This is awesome. I really, really
Will
appreciate
Jackson,
this conversation.
Thanks so much for being able to join us.
Yeah,
and,
absolutely. Yeah, we really appreciate it.
Glad you're feeling better as well.
Yeah.
And hopefully we see y'all in Long Beach or Print Hustlers. We'd love to make the connection. And,
I almost made it to Print Hustlers. That's like October, right?
November.
It's November. And it's in California, which I know is a long flight, but it's going to be awesome. So
November 4th, 5th, and 6th.
Cool. Sweet.
Glad to see y'all there.
Will's got a baby coming around.
All right, y'all.
Yeah.
Oh, early congrats.
Yeah. Appreciate it. Yeah. I was like, you know what? I'm going to go to this thing. I want to go see what it's about. But right, yes, baby comes first.
Hey, pronouncers, thank you so much for listening to another episode. We'll see you on the next one. Thanks so much for listening. Hopefully that was informative. Don't forget to subscribe. Don't forget to like. Don't forget to hit the bell for notifications if you enjoyed this video. If you enjoy all the stuff we're putting out, it's really helpful. We love to just be able to see it. That means that we're doing a good job. To subscribe, hit the bell for notifications and hit the like button. And I'll see you in the next episode. Bye.